From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the pages of New York Magazine with an idea about religion and also about atheists. Andrew Sullivan is a conservative author and commentator. He's a Catholic. His piece was titled America's New Religions. The central point Sullivan wanted to make was that in modern times, humans have replaced religion with other belief systems, but they hold to those beliefs just as strongly as they do to established religions. Sullivan prevented supporters of President Trump as one example. He says they will never change their minds about him no matter what evidence you offer. He offered social justice activists as another. In essence, anything that people believe so strongly that they could not possibly change their mind is a kind of religion, Sullivan says. And just based on simple definitions, he's not wrong about that. But he made a separate point. Sullivan didn't just argue that many people behave as if their beliefs are actually their own religion. He contends that everyone, every human, is religious. Here's how he opens the piece. Quote, "Everyone has a religion. It is, in fact, impossible not to have a religion if you are a human being. It has expressed itself in every culture, in every age, including our own secularized husk of a society. By religion, I mean something quite specific, a practice, not a theory, a way of life that gives meaning, a meaning that cannot really be defended without recourse to some transcendent value, some undying truth, or God or gods." End quote. And then Sullivan has this to say about the non-religious population. Quote, "Even today's atheists are expressing an attenuated form of religion. Their denial of any God is as absolute as others' faith in God and entails just as much a set of values to live by." End quote. Sullivan's piece was debated fiercely this past weekend, with David Brooks from the New York Times declaring it as one of the finest pieces about religion ever written, while Vox's David Roberts called it one of the single stupidest things he's ever read in his life. For atheists, the piece was a kind of reworking of the often invoked phrase, well, science must be your religion. There's been a lot of pushback, with atheists feeling like they have been Christian-splained by Sullivan. So this hour, it's a chance to air out this idea that, well, everyone must have a religious set of beliefs, even if it's not a real major religion. And yes, even atheists have to do that. My guests include Dan Courtney, co-founder of Young Skeptics. Yes, an atheist?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, still an atheist.
Absolutely.
Nice
yes,
to see you back
thank you.
Here. Ty Gagnon, an atheist with degrees in philosophy and theology. Ty, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also with us is Tom Praietti, resident scholar in media for St. John Fisher College. What are you, an existential secularist? What do you call yourself?
Yeah, that was pretty close. Yeah, I'm confused by the whole process. So I definitely do not belong to a religious group. And I don't believe in any deities.
Well, it turns out that you are religious if you believe Andrew Sullivan.
Well, Andrew Sullivan and I, we would probably have some arm wrestling.
Yeah. Well, let's go around the table here, because this is something that we hear just as a starting point for the discussion. This is something that atheists are told all the time. Dan Courtney, how many times have you heard, well, science is your religion?
Yeah, that's a common trope.
And this piece felt like a version of that, didn't it?
Yeah, in fact, you read the part that I wanted to highlight right off the bat, which says their denial of any God is as absolute as any other's faith in God. Clearly, he doesn't know the same atheists that I know, because we don't declare that there is no God. We simply say that there is no good evidence to believe that a God or a deity exists. So it's an important distinction, and it's important to point out that he is laying upon at the feet of atheists beliefs that we, many of us anyway, don't have.
I'm glad you keyed on that point, Dan, because I have to say this about Andrew Sullivan. I've read him for years, and I have a lot of affection for him as a writer. One of the reasons is, in his blog, back in the days of real, like, sort of individual blogging, he was a titan in the blogging world, more than 1 million readers a day. And he admitted all the time, my beliefs will change over time. I will look back and feel stupid about some things I've written, and I will admit when I'm wrong. And I really value that, which is why I think I'm really disappointed in this piece, because I don't think it's a good faith piece. I think Ty is dying. Are you okay?
I'll be okay.
Can I get you a gallon of water?
That's the deities.
A new trachea?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think when Andrew Sullivan says that atheists' belief that there is no God is as absolute as those who are religious have a belief in a God, I don't think he's arguing in good faith. I think he knows that that's not true, and I don't understand it fully.
Yeah, I don't know if he knows it's not true or not.
You don't, okay.
No, but, you know, as the founder of Young Skeptics, I try to teach people to be skeptical, but that doesn't mean that you don't accept things based upon evidence. We've got to find out what the evidence is. And if there's good evidence for something, then I would more than willing to accept it. There just is not good evidence, in my opinion, for a deity or deities.
I mean, and this extends to everything, I think, in our sphere of public and private life. If you, I assume, climate change is something you're concerned about.
Absolutely.
Okay. In fact, I think you've been on the show in the past talking about how you've retrofitted your home to try to deal with energy issues.
And I drive an electric car now.
If I had evidence that showed that Ty Gagnon's coughing was actually the cause of climate change, and it was scientifically provable, you'd move your opinion, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And you go back to driving a Hummer.
I don't know if I go that far, but yeah, if there was good evidence, it seems a little far-fetched to me, but if there's good evidence, then of course I would accept it.
If I had evidence that said driving a Hummer is good for climate change, it actually reduces emissions.
Well, okay, now we could talk about getting a Hummer.
Okay, so that's the point here, is it's evidence-based, and that's why I thought that remark by Sullivan kind of gave the game away, as I thought it was bad faith. Yeah. What did you think, Ty?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think for me, I don't come to atheism via science. I come via philosophy and via the writings of Albert Camus, in the sense that religion, and I'm sure we're going to touch on this later, religion provides too many shortcuts to meaning instead of the individual finding that for themselves, and that that is a form of bad faith itself. But yeah, I agree. I'm not, to say that I come to it not through science doesn't mean I'm anti-science. I think that's one of the things that I would need to find out about the world, that there was some sort of evidence that there is a deity, to convince me that I wanted to back that.
But do you feel Sullivan is correct at all in saying that as an atheist, your belief that there is no God is as absolute as others' belief that there is a God?
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay. Did you grow up religious?
Not really, no.
Okay. Never in your life, even back to childhood, did you think of yourself as someone who believed in a God?
Well, I didn't. So in my childhood, no. Not really religious. In high school and college, I was very much a fundamentalist evangelical Christian.
Okay. We should do a whole separate hour on your life. So Tom, as someone you say that you're as mildly confused but not believing in any mainstream religion here, what did you make of Sullivan's contention that every human being must be religious in some way?
Well, yeah, it's difficult because I'm not exactly sure what definition of religion he was operating from. I've always found that even the term atheism, put an ISM on the end of it, it sounds like a religion. So I think maybe we should be called something else. I come to religion and the view of religion mostly through communication and power. All relationships are power relationships. And what I see in most religions is a group of mostly men trying for centuries to control human behavior. And they've, you know, in my particular case, it was Christianity, Catholicism. And I found such disconnect between the people who practiced at the highest levels, the popes and the priests and the bishops and whatnot, and what was being preached allegedly by somebody who was the son of a god. There was such a disconnect between the two. In fact, you've heard me talk about this before. I'm an ABC traveler. We travel a lot, but anything but cathedrals for me, because I look at a cathedral and I get really angry. I see just a massive abuse of power based on something that doesn't really, you know, doesn't really register. It just doesn't make an awful lot of sense. And I'm going to be 73 years old in February, and I ask everyone the question, who is religious? I say, so what's going to happen to me after I die? My dad used to say the greatest marketing job in the world was any religion that could convince a group of people that they should give up most of their money or some of their money and be devout and alter their behavior to follow some guidelines based on the promise that your best life was coming after you die. And when I went into marketing, he said to me, remember what the Christians have done. And I think he meant pretty much every religion. But I look at it as a power relationship. So, you know, in my particular case, I think I'd like to maintain as much of the power as I can personally. But I also feel somewhat cheated. I was around 16 years old as a Catholic when I realized none of this made any sense to me. I didn't see any correlation between what was going on in the Catholic Church, especially on Sunday morning.
The power and relationship thing that you bring up is interesting because maybe it's just because I just saw somebody share an oft-invoked George Carlin bit in which yes. he talked about the different structures of economic society and yes. that those at the top want to maintain their power by turning those at the middle against those who are poor. And that it's always fear of the other, you know, fear of someone who doesn't look like you, blaming them for your problems. Right. And so if as long as you cast your glance elsewhere, you don't look up to the top of the economic right. chart and get upset with them. And if that happens, then you don't ask for change. Well, I'm thinking the construct that you're giving me is people, mostly men over the years, creating these religious structures in which they are pretty wealthy, pretty well off. Those who worship, maybe not, but they promise them, don't worry, in the afterlife, we all get the same.
Yeah, well, even better.
How about here we get the same?
The 70 virgins are waiting for you if you blow up the bus. You know, that's just astonishing to me.
Okay, well, so the bottom line being, and I don't think that that's a mainstream.
No, but it's not, again, I'm going to be 73 years old pretty soon. What's going to happen to me? I'm terminal. What's going to happen to me after I die?
Well, we're all terminal, but I hear that.
Well, it's a burning question and has yep. been for many, many years. And now, you know, my mother said I would, you know, she died a few years ago. She said I would find religion right before I died. And I said, I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not convinced of that. I've never seen anybody come back. You know, people say they come back in your dreams. They come back and talk to you. They make a presence in your life. It's never happened to
me.
That's
Pascal's wager. And God is yes. way too smart to see through. If there's a God who's actually omniscient, I'm pretty sure he could see through that you're sort of venally offering this bet. Well, I'll go to church if I get the paradise.
Yeah, hedging my bet.
Yeah, I'm not really sure it's a good wager.
But another part of the process, too, is we were joking about this before, is if I were a religion, if we atheists were a religion, we'd get all the tax breaks that religions get. And there's like 10 rules that the IRS sets up for us to qualify for religious breaks, which costs the American taxpayer, I guess, about $80 billion a year. But atheists don't qualify for any of that. So I can't declare myself a pastor. We have no system of beliefs. We have no schools. My property is not tax exempt. So there's a certain amount of practicality for atheists, is there a certain amount of impracticality in being an atheist? And I don't think he touched that at all, except with, you know, his little nod to Christopher Hitchens, who kind of talks, you know,
sure.
the brilliant. Yeah. The, you know, Hitchens' book is brilliant. I know he's an obnoxious character, or he was, but his work is brilliant.
Well, let's get to the point on meaning here. So, Ty, you know, as someone who is, you know, has degrees in philosophy, theology, I think Andrew Sullivan is trying to say at the outset is that human beings understand that we're the only animal in the world that understands that we're going to die. And therefore, maybe one part of this is fearing death and looking for sort of a bridge to continue life. But also this idea that, well, while we are here, what's the meaning? And we need some sort of meaning. I don't have a problem with that contention. I have a problem with saying, therefore, all people, even atheists, are religious, and that your atheism is your form of religion. I think that that is just a desperate attempt to conflate religion with everything else. But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that people need meaning or want meaning. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad contention to make. And I agree. I think he is conflating the idea of religion and meaning and belonging. To be part of a group doesn't make that group religious, or to want to belong to a group doesn't mean that you're joining some religion just because, you know, you want to be a part of this thing. Try to say that carefully. but yeah, the conflating those things is a big problem in the article. And I think the broader issue for me, especially conflating meaning with religion, is that it relegates meaning to an external source.
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
No, that's important. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So to say that the only way for me as an individual to find meaning is to join a group, to believe something that somebody else believes, to practice some practices that other people believe or that other people practice, that I have to do something external or join into something outside of myself in order to find meaning, instead of saying that it's possible for me to find meaning within my own life as an individual. And I think that argument runs counter to his conclusion at the end, where he's talking about tribalism being this big problem and sort of lamenting the loss of individual. I'm like, you just took out took out my individual freedom to find my own meaning.
Right.
Yeah. Your meaning, he must determine it valid enough for him to grant that it's, because he takes some shots at modern technology and habits, et cetera, as if that's meaningless. Whereas I don't think he gets to decide what's meaningless for you, right?
No, not at all. Yeah. That's not fair.
And nor do we do the same back for him. I mean, that's one of the things I think. One of the comfort zones for me in atheism, agnosticism, whatever you want to call it, is I really am not trying to impose anything on you. But I know growing up as a Catholic, they were constantly throwing rules and boundaries around me. And fortunately, I had a dad who was pretty skeptical about the whole process and used to say, you know what, guys, you have to make up your own minds. And when I wanted to stop going to church, it was terrible for my mother. It was okay for my dad. My dad recognized in me there was kind of a liberation going on. I also have to say, some people are probably thinking, well, you've been associated with St. John Fisher College. Being around priests and some of the smartest people I've ever met in my life at Fisher was truly liberating for me, because I found them totally, totally not just accepting, but enlightening and engaging and willing to hear me out and never, ever trying to change who I was.
Oh, there are fabulous people of all stripes and belief systems. And sometimes there's a risk that atheists can think, well, Christians XYZ or religious. And that's not true either. That's not fair either.
No, you're exactly right.
So I'm glad to hear that your experience, I'm not surprised that your experience at Fisher has been so enriching.
No, it was, it continues to be fantastic. And I've never heard a parent say to their child or any child come to me and any of my students say to me, my parents don't want me to talk to you because you're not Catholic. It's never had any bearing on it. The thing I have noticed since 1968 when I started teaching at Fisher is a definite move away from all forms of just organized religion, period.
Sure.
And I think Fisher now is probably 60% not Catholic. Non-Catholic as far as students go.
Yeah.
So it's become a really different place.
Dan Courtney, where do you find meaning?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sullivan addresses this, as you mentioned early in the article, and he quotes the philosopher John Gray, and he says, quote, "Religion is an attempt to find meaning in events, not a theory that tries to explain the universe," unquote. Now, those two things are not mutually exclusive.
Religion totally tries to explain the universe. But anyway, go ahead.
Absolutely. And then he goes on to talk about science can't fill the void because it doesn't provide an ultimate meaning. The problem with that is, and I think with many religions, is trying to provide what he calls this ultimate meaning or a cosmic meaning or some objective meaning that we all should be striving towards. And as Ty mentioned, there is no cosmic ultimate meaning. We derive meaning in what we do, the things that we value, whether that's raising a family or making the world better through a radio program that informs people. Things of that nature are what we derive meaning from. There is no, like I said, there is no ultimate meaning that we can all gather around and strive for. And I think he makes that mistake in this article. And as I mentioned to you earlier, that's kind of a fundamental error that he makes, and it's all downhill from there.
Well, don't assume that I derive meaning from this radio show. I actually just do it for the money.
Okay.
My meaning is derived from Pokemon.
Well, I derive meaning from being here.
I'm a 6-year-old. He's got me turned on to it. No, I mean, I take that point. I'm being obviously flipped there, but this notion of where we derive meaning is so individual.
Yes.
And it almost feels like, you know, we have to create standards. I'll go back to the point Tom was making. You know, you don't judge people. You don't impose anything. The one thing that I think should be imposed is an expectation that as we derive our own individual meaning, we're not going to limit others from having a chance to live freely, to express their own selves. You know, as long as you can't hurt other people, that's pretty much the baseline. So that's what I would like to impose, no hurting people. And beyond that, yes, you know, sure. derive meaning where you want it.
But in Sullivan's defense, he does make a good point that there is an issue with meaning in our society. And he talks about the opioid crisis, for example.
Of which he has written a wonderful piece on, as an aside. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, he talks about that in this, he doesn't use a term crisis of meaning, but we do have a crisis of meaning. And it is in part, I do have some sympathy for the fact that we are exiting a system that essentially handed it down and said, this is what your meaning should be. And we need to transition to a society in which we can derive our own meaning. And we need to help people lead meaningful lives. So there is that transition, that gap, if you would, that we're kind of in the middle of, that we need to bridge.
All right. Well, in the tradition of Andrew Sullivan, my own thoughts are sort of evolving in real time here. So let's go back to the subject of meaning, and I'll kick it over to you, Ty, but let's all jump in on this here. So as I think about meaning, maybe we have to be judgmental to an extent on meaning. I don't know. I'm working through this in my brain, and I'm remembering a conversation we had with Jeremy Chung, who's this amazing guy who's an activist who moved to Rochester in the last year to take a year off from his career. Megan Mack, what's the term that he used that I thought was so smart? Jeremy is this really interesting guy from New York City, and he called it fun employment. He gave up a year of his retirement savings to work on activist causes. But he says as he looks back at his career in fashion design, he views his old self as shallow. It was the Pulse nightclub shooting that really activated him as a gay man to think about things that matter more than just fashion design, et cetera. I think there's a fine line here. I think people who do artistic things, people who design things, people who have visual senses are all contributing beauty and important things to the world. But I think it's also fair to say if there's glaring inequality and climate change staring us in the face, if you spend 95% of your time, you know, on collecting staplers, is that a good, is that meaningful? I don't know. Ty, do we have to just be absolutist and say we're not going to judge what others derive meaning from, or should we judge it? I actually don't know how I feel about this.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
You know, honestly, I'm not sure entirely how I feel about it either. I think I would tend to fall down on, yeah, you know, you spend 95% of your time playing Pokemon. There's nothing in the world that I can tell that says you should or shouldn't do that. If you have some responsibility to another person, maybe that's not a good use of your time. But
the devil's advocate, I like bringing in the devil in a conversation about atheism. I'll play devil's advocate and say, even if you don't have someone that you're sort of beholden to helping raise a child, helping care for a sick parent, et cetera, you could make the argument that with your gifts in life, that's not a good use of almost all of your time because you could be doing more to help society. Again, I'm just throwing this out there. I don't know that I feel that way. Help me process that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know that every person needs to help society.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's okay. You know, not everybody has to be an activist. Not everybody has to be an artist. Not everybody has to be, quote, productive. That's in the sort of broadest sense of meaning. I can't tell anybody to live their life any particular way, I don't think.
I tend to agree with you, Ty. And I, as a college professor for years, I thought what I tried to do was as much good as possible. But it was my definition of good. And I kept thinking, you know, it was kind of like the basic Christian, do unto others as they would do unto you. And I went to college for many years and I didn't have that many teachers who changed me for the good or the bad or for evil. Most of them were pretty much nondescript, and I don't mean that. That's not a nasty description, or it just kind of is the reality of what it is. You know, I, I once ran an ad campaign for Monroe Community College, and we went around and said, what's the most significant question you can ask about a college? And it came down to, how many of your professors do you actually remember? And then how many do you remember in a good light? And it came down to, most people can only remember three, and two they remembered for good reasons and one for kind of evil reasons. When I first started teaching, I remember telling my wife, I said, I don't think I'll ever be a great teacher, but I think I can do a lot of good by being just a little bit different, a little bit more available, a little bit more helpful. You know, and so none of that was driven by anything but, I guess the notion of do unto others as they would do unto you. And that's, I kept thinking, every time I put myself in a scenario where I could have been mean, I made it just the opposite. And so just constantly trying to look for good.
Yeah. Each of us values something different and we have different goals.
Yes.
It's inherent that there's going to be conflict. So, Tom, for example, what you value and the way you're going about achieving your goals may conflict with what I value and the way I go about achieving goals. So,
and just so you know, Dan, several times I had colleagues come to me saying that I was undermining the system.
Right.
I would let students resubmit a paper. I would say, you did it the first time. This is the incubator. Let's try it again. And, you didn't. I wouldn't even put a grade on it. I would put it incomplete and say, you know what? If you want to, let's put a grade on it. We'll put a grade on it after you've resubmitted it. And I'll never forget the first time I did that. And one of my colleagues came and said, you're undermining the whole process because I'm not going to do that. I'm never going to grade a paper a second time. And I said, well, isn't that our job? And, interesting just to see that difference.
Yeah. I guess my point is that although that conflict is inherent in human interactions,
right?
The way we resolve that or get closer to a more just and society is that we use conversations like this to have a greater understanding so that I can understand what you're trying to achieve, you can understand what I'm trying to achieve, and we can come to some type of equilibrium. But what Sullivan talks about is, for example, he rails against progress and Steven Pinker's discussion of human progress and improving the human condition, and that's not giving us this ultimate utopia of peace and prosperity. Well, the problem is that because there's always going to be this inherent conflict in values, there is no ultimate utopia. There's only the path of progress that leads on indefinitely.
Amen.
So,
and if I can piggyback on that, when you were talking about sort of achieving your goal and achieving somebody else achieving their goal and that sort of process, I think it's important for us to question whether or not we think meaning is goal-oriented or not.
Yeah.
Because if there's no ultimate utopia, there may not be an ultimate goal to finding meaning. It's just a thing you do in your life. It's a thing that humans do.
Right. I guess I would come down on the side that, meaning is goal-oriented, but they're all what I would call proximate goals. There's some shorter term, there's some longer term. Like, I want my family to be able to prosper into the future. I want to be able to get home safely today.
Right.
All those different durations of goals and different scope of goal, but there is no ultimate goal.
All right. I've got some phone calls I've got to take and a lot of feedback from listeners. I think I just kind of want to put a point on the idea that if you read Andrew Sullivan's piece, and we'll link to it if you want to check it out, America's New Religions, if he were here, he would say, look, the whole point of this that he's trying to make is as we become a less religious society, and by less religious, we mean more nuns, more nuns, not N-U-N, N-O-N-E, in terms of if you're checking a box, what religion do you ascribe to? As we become more of a society that are more nuns, then he's saying, he's observing that he thinks we've replaced that by almost religiously believing in, for some, he says, social justice, for some, Donald Trump, for some, atheism, in the same way that we believed in the old churches and major religions. And he is concerned about that in some ways, but is offering it as an observation point. And I would say that for some people, that may be true, that if you believe so deeply that nothing could change your mind about anything related to Donald Trump, then yes, you're at the church of Donald Trump. Climate change, yes, you're in the church of climate, whatever it is. That's true, but I think it misreads atheists in a way that was just sort of meant to denigrate atheism. And he's got a little bit of a history of doing that, but I don't think it it speaks well for the dialogue there, which is why I wanted to have this discussion. Right. Generally speaking, atheists are open to evidence about God.
Yes.
And they're still looking for it.
Just looking like crazy.
I mean,
I usually find it in
Josh Groban is not enough. So you're going to need something. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back and we're going to take some of your phone calls at this. So we're having a good conversation with Dan Courtney, Ty Gagnon, Tom Proietti, and your phone calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the Next Connections, stink bugs, what to do about them, and the interesting story about releasing wasps to go after them. Not just any wasp, samurai wasps. Do you want to bring those in to go after your stink bugs? We're going to talk about the epidemic, how to contain it, Tuesday. Welcome back to Connections. All right, let's work through your phone calls. In Penfield, this is Jonathan first. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for the call. I just wanted to say that I think Sullivan's, he's trying to simplify science down to the level of religion, and I don't agree that the two can fairly be compared. Science is way more than an attempt at meaning. You know, there's a certain functionality of science that makes it different. You can't really construct a building or a hard drive with religion. You know, you need to draw on that vast accumulation of knowledge that we've learned from the years over our maths and sciences. So, also, I think that he's saying that religion, or science, it's way too rigid, and I don't agree with that at all. Belief structure that changes. You know, our understanding of something expects that it's an incomplete truth. And when something better with evidence comes along, we accept that, whereas religion is just cast in stone and it's never changed. They're just too different. You know, I think he's just trying to raise hackles, and I think the comparison is silly.
I don't know. I mean, and I've really enjoyed his writing over the years, even when it drives me up the wall.
But, and I feel the same way, Evan. I'm a fan of his.
Yeah, sure. So, but Jonathan, let me just ask you briefly here. When you return us, and I'm glad you did, to this idea that, well, science can't give you all of the meaning. I don't think science is an attempt at meaning. It's an attempt at knowledge. And what we do with that knowledge sort of depends on our own values and interests, and we're going to derive different meaning from different knowledge, I would think.
I think it's a way of exploring the world. And you know what? If you don't want to explore the world, you don't have to.
Okay.
But it's certainly not, you know, rigid guidelines. And so I just think the two can't be compared.
Yeah, Jonathan, thank you. It's a great point. But I'm sure there are some dogmatic scientists, so you can't talk them off their perch, and they would maybe give science a bad name. That does not invalidate science.
Right. I think Jonathan makes the point. Really, they're talking about two different things. Science answers the how question. Religion answers the why question, or at least attempts to answer the why question. Often religion tries to also answer the how question and gets in trouble trying to do it.
Exactly right.
But there really are two different questions they're trying to answer.
Yeah, now, you know, I think the arts and the humanities help us as human beings try to understand meaning. And that's one of the things I really took away from, you know, 40 years of being associated with St. John Fisher College. And there was a huge head bumping going on when I first proposed a communication program, because many of the people in the arts and the humanities were like, well, no, that's occupational therapy. You know, and I'm like, no, it's actually a field where you can earn a living. And we need more people who have heart, who have this drive for meaning and sense of what the good is. And, you know, and then it finally registered and it worked.
Okay. Back to your phone calls we go. And we're going to go to John in, I don't know where you are, John. Are you in Rochester? Go ahead. Hi, John.
Yes, hi. I am in Rochester. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Oh, yeah, thanks for the conversation. And let's see. Tom Freddy, I was in one of your classes years ago.
Oh, you poor thing.
Probably, I don't know if you remember me.
Hi, John.
Yeah, I was in a career class. And I'm an admitted atheist. I don't have a problem, less so. I was raised Catholic and all that, and you know, I was an altar boy once. But even with that, I didn't really have a belief in God, even I think back when I was a child, I do remember thinking how kind of weird Catholicism was with the statues and, you know, the human sacrifice talk and all this. But I don't know, maybe, you know, I come from an Irish Catholic background. But I would say, if I'm telling people, say, what my beliefs are, I'm more of like an iconoclast. I'm always looking for what's behind the image, you know, and I do get reactions from people who are very devout sometimes, some others not.
John, let me just jump in. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I do remember seeing Christopher Hitchens speak. Let's say Andrew Sullivan's saying that atheists are religious. Okay. Well, I would say I'll have faith in some things. But I got to tell you, I saw Christopher Hitchens speak at the U of R years ago when he was healthy and alive. And he spent the majority of that hour or so taking questions from the audience. He was there for his book, The Missionary Position, on Mother Teresa thing. And when I arrived, there was, I'm sure, Catholics out front with holding candles and chanting, and, you know, there's a group of about 20 of them. He spent the whole hour taking questions, and this group of Catholics kept interrupting people, asking questions, and kind of causing disruption. But he stayed the course. He kept talking to the audience and asking anyone to, you know, comment any way they wanted.
John, I gotta jump in here because I know you got a lot to say on Christopher Hitchens. We could do a whole hour on the late Christopher Hitchens, who was an amazing debater. You're right. I mean, if you look up his debates, I'm so glad I never had to interview him.
Wow.
Because that he probably would have left me a small shell of a person after a conversation. But John brought up the fact that you know, sometimes the way his colleagues think about, you know, is he devout in his own beliefs, et cetera? It brought to mind an email I just had from a listener, and I'll read it from Eric. He says, "Hi, Evan and the Connections team. When I was young, I considered myself an atheist, but as I got older, I realized the intrinsic fallacy of anything being absolute. For example, the absolute idea that God does or does not exist. I'd argue that anyone that thinks of anything in absolute terms and infallible truths that just so happen to be part of their belief system is, in a way, religious. As a result, I now consider myself an agnostic." And he says, "We don't even know what there is to know." That's from Eric. Yeah.
Well said.
I'm sure there are absolute atheists. I just don't encounter them that often. You know, I mean, do you?
Yeah, you know, John was...
I'm sure there are.
Getting to, what you're getting toward is the idea of faith, I think, and the idea that atheism is just another form of faith, or they have faith in science, things of that nature. And I think what that confuses is what technically is called an inductive inference versus faith. An inductive inference is nothing more than, you know, I sit in a chair a number of times, therefore I'll generalize that when I go to sit in a chair, it's going to hold me up. Whereas faith is believing that something is the case without having any evidence at all. And I think faith, to be perfectly honest, is a dirty word. And we shouldn't be using the term faith and conflating it with
confidence.
With confidence.
Yeah.
That's another good way to put it.
Exactly. When John says, "Oh, I've got faith in something," my brain immediately said, my guess is what you mean is you have confidence.
Yeah, yes. Confidence.
You have different degrees of confidence in different things.
Many students ask me over the years, say, "Oh, don't you have faith in anything?" And I say, "Well, you know, if I get in an elevator and I hit 3 and the door opens, I'm pretty sure we might have gotten to 3. But I'm not 100% sure. And I don't know if that's faith."
That's probably confidence.
That's confidence.
That the science of the elevator worked well enough. When you get on an airplane, you don't want to just have faith that the person flying, like they handed it to somebody who looked like you look like you could be a pilot. Yeah. Well, I've got faith. No, you want to have confidence that this person does their job well.
Absolutely.
Same thing with a doctor. So I take Dan Courtney's point on the distinction in terms. I do think that matters. And
yes,
I appreciate it.
Too.
John, thanks for the phone call.
I think that's part of the struggle that Andrew Sullivan's bringing up here is that, you know, the words are problematic. We still haven't, you know, and part of the other thing is even when you threw this out on Twitter, at least for me, was there's a lot of people still afraid to come out of the closet and say,
sure,
I'm an atheist, you know, and atheist, agnostic, whatever, you can use any of those terms on me. I'm just confused.
But it doesn't, Ty Gagnon, mean nihilist. I mean, that's where it's almost this association that some, and that's where the meaning question comes back in. And I think Andrew Sullivan, even though I question how good faith the argument that he made about atheists was, I do think he sincerely feels that you may be lacking meaning in your life in some way if you don't have some religious aspect of it, that it might just be nihilism. Is it nihilism?
No. No.
And you asked that as a good faith question. That's what you just said.
Yeah, nihilism would be the belief that absolutely nothing has meaning. You can't find meaning ever. That's impossible. It doesn't exist. That meaning is a meaningless word.
Yeah.
And that's I don't know anybody who's really a nihilist.
Nor
do I.
Actually, I would like to open the phones to any nihilists who want to call. I want to do an hour with nihilists who just really, let's do this. But generally speaking, I don't know any atheists who are nihilists. I want to go to Gary in Bloomfield next. Go ahead, Gary.
You've gone quite a bit away from the point I was going to make earlier. But it's been fascinating. I've just been, hanging on the phone here, listening to every word, and mostly agreeing with everything. I do. As you're speaking, I was thinking how so much of this is semantics, because I mean I distrust semantics because a lot of times we label things and we then think that we know them. And once we decide we know something, we're not open to listening anymore. but actually, my original point was way back before the break, someone was mentioning the values that were needed. And I think it was you, Evan, that said, as long as you're not hurting anyone, And I thought about that, and I'm thinking, when people dedicate their lives just to sheer pleasure and they're enjoying themselves and they're just focusing only on their consumption, that in fact does hurt other people.
It can,
because
yeah.
When you spend, the whole concept of, speculation drives up the cost unnecessarily for everybody who needs the product, whereas the person who's over-consuming doesn't really need it anymore. So in that regard, even just the selfish lifestyle of saying, I want this, I'm going to get this, is harming people.
It certainly can. And Gary, I really appreciate this call, because I think that Ty was making a point earlier just on, you can derive your own meaning if it means 95% of your waking life has spent doing one thing that's fun to you, as long as it doesn't obviously inflict harm on others. But there's a lot of things that you have to consider. I mean, if that hobby is knitting, do you know where the materials came from? I mean, I bought my brother a scarf for Christmas. I don't know where it was made. It might have been a nice gesture, but I might be hurting people by not realizing the supply chain here and who's involved with that. And to some degree, I feel like we tie ourselves in knots with that. But if we're looking at meaning and saying, if we find meaning in this, it's okay, can we then start sort of putting a grade on it based on trying to look at the ripple of our actions there?
Yeah, I think there's... In life, there are so many different sort of circles to consider here. And there's the idea of meaning and finding that for yourself. And there's going to be things that you do in your life that don't provide meaning. I don't find laundry meaningful, you know. It's
I was just thinking of my golf game.
But there are sort of obligations or responsibilities that we wind up having. There's how we interact as individuals with our society. And I think what I want to do is be careful not to moralize meaning itself and to have sort of meaning, let meaning have its own sphere in the living of an individual's life, and let morality and let values have their own spheres, and where they overlap is where the individual is.
Right. That's, I think that's really well said.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to take your class. Are you teaching?
No.
He should be.
Oh. Okay.
But there are some, you know, just think about this. I've been a communicator most of my professional career, and one of the most difficult things we have is, you know, this brilliant, amazing, but very slippery, sloppy thing of called language. And it's not easy. It's not precise. It's dynamic. It's constantly changing. It has so many levels of functionality. And I can say the word hot, and it has five different meanings for all the people in the room. And it's, you know, it's a very difficult thing. We're trying to negotiate things that are way beyond our linguistic abilities. And that's not easy to do.
And it's important in these discussions to at least come to some agreement on what we mean about a certain word for this certain time.
The boundaries, right?
You know, so Sullivan does provide this sort of definition of religion as a practice and not a theory. And for me, that's a really insufficient definition of religion, because you could apply it to surgeons.
Yes.
Right? You have ritual hand washing. Yeah. You have to walk through doors certain ways. There's garments that you wear. You have attendants who do certain things, and everyone has their own. Like, that's a religion.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, when you define it so broadly, it ends up losing all its meaning.
Yeah.
Ironically.
Yeah, that's why I thought there are parts of that. I read Sullivan's piece. And I went, you're too good to do this lazy of a piece. Come on, man.
Well, I think he was provoking things, and, you know, he generated a conversation.
Well,
like
he
this,
did that.
I know.
Well,
and you know what? I feel much better after reading it, and much better after thinking about all. You know, I was talking to someone yesterday, and she said to me, she said, "Well, how could you lose faith?" And I said, "You know, a long time ago, my dad said to me, when Jesus gave sight to the blind person, we called it a miracle. And he said, if he had ended blindness, that would have been a miracle." And I sat there, I looked at him, and I said, "Wow, I never thought of it that way." And he said, "Well, they wouldn't let you think of it that way." I mean, he was meaning the Catholic Church. He said, they would not let you think of it that way.
Right.
In a questioning kind of way.
No, it's an interesting point, though. A God that is going to heal one person's blindness,
yeah, why one?
But leave children to be blind by the thousands.
And, yeah, with just poverty. Yeah, but I mean, all of those things are so difficult, and they make religion for me a very slippery area.
I'm going to read Tim's email, and then I'm going to challenge Dan Courtney on something here, because Dan's been on the program in the past here.
Yeah, he's a pro.
Tim says, "I look at it this way: if religion helps someone become a better human being, then I'm not bothered by organized religion at all. As long as they're not trying to brainwash me or judge me because of their beliefs, then to each their own. You have people who have issues like addiction that are grasping for something to help them, and religion, a lot of the time, helps them. Whether they believe wholeheartedly in every word of the Bible is up for debate, but there is something that's helping them, which seems fine." And to Tim's point there, we've got an opioid crisis. Some of the amazing work happening is in the secular community, and some of the amazing work happening is in the faith community. And we've seen it. And I just want to just thank people who are doing that. And do you see the work that organized religion does as occasionally tremendously beneficial to society?
Absolutely. With the caveat.
Okay.
That the doctrinal part of religion has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. That it isn't required that it be done by religious people.
In fact, in preparing for the show, I was reading a study on the opioid crisis, talking about recovery, and the religiosity of the program that people were involved with had nothing to do with their recovery. What's important for recovery is to have a supportive community and family and a structure in place.
And if they find it in church.
If they find it in church, I'm all for that. I have no problem with that.
See, I want to bridge these divides because I think sometimes we feel like, well, atheists just hate religious people and religious people don't get atheists. Oh. And that is not true. But there are times that the rhetoric gets extreme. And what I see is occasional amazing work happening. And some of my favorite conversations in this community are with really interesting people in the secular community and the faith community. But I think to Dan's point, it doesn't have to be a religious component
right.
as you see it.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, and what you're pointing out, it's just people. I don't really even care what you believe in or ultimately. If you're out to help, and you're pointing out the opioid crisis, but it's any
people
scenario
have tremendous
in life.
Capacity for good.
Yeah, we really do. But, you know, in the past few years, the religious right in this country has turned it into a war by calling, you know, by saying many of the things that people like me say are warlike. And now to be a secular humanist is to be close to Satan in the old world.
Well,
that's just awful.
Well, you know how I'm going to close the program now that it is legally allowed in this country again?
Please.
I'm going to tell Dan Courtney Merry Christmas.
Hey, I celebrate Christmas. It's okay.
Just don't sing those nasty songs.
What did you say about Christmas?
I celebrate Christmas.
Oh. Okay.
All secular aspects of Christmas.
Absolutely.
The decorations, spending time with the kids.
I'm being
wonderful.
Totally facetious. I think there's so much this time of year that is beautiful and wonderful, and I just want to thank our guests for being here, Dan Courtney, Ty Gagnon, Tom Praetti. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I didn't get to your phone calls or emails, should we do it again soon? I mean, apparently we talk philosophy, meaning, debate. We have wonderful conversations on this program, and I appreciate that. Our thanks to Rob Braden, engineer. Megan Mack is the producer of Connections and basically the reason that anything good happens on the radio here. I just sit in front of a microphone, and I'm going to do it again tomorrow. Talk to you then.